So, when did counseling stop being about problem solving?
Well, not anymore.
Introducing solution-focused counseling
with the Unlicensed Counselor.
And now, here's your host, Steve Moak.
Well, hello, and welcome to another beautiful day here in sunny Scottsdale, Arizona. My name is Steve Moak. I am the Unlicensed Counselor. Thanks for tuning in to the Unlicensed Counselor podcast. So grateful, as always. Just going to keep hammering the grateful part. Just so grateful to be here, grateful to be able to talk. Just had some fun conversation before we got on air here with some of the friends in studio. Boy, it is a lot of fun to get to kind of do things that you're passionate about and kind of bringing this podcast to my life, to kind of others across the country and even across the globe has been really just so much fun, right? Just so much fun. And thanks for tuning in. Thanks for spending a few minutes of your day in your car, wherever you're at, listening. And kind of listening to some of the thoughts I have on various topics. So I'm going to talk about some interesting things today. As always, you know, the title that I came up with is The Problem with Care, right? I want to talk about the treatment center industry a little bit. I want to talk about the lack of outcomes. I want to talk about a scandal, fraud, that's actually going on here currently, which is why, again, I try and keep it a little bit topical here in the state of Arizona where I'm at. I know it doesn't pertain to the whole country, but I do think this happens with just Medicare billing and fraud and how it's not only, you know, going to hurt others and the care and the cost and just all the different ramifications of that. Second half of the show, I want to talk about two different things that I think would be interesting, but let's maybe save that for a few minutes and circle back to it. Before we get too far into the problem with care today, as always, I want to take a minute and say thank you to our sponsors. First off, our friends at ShareTech. You've heard me talk about ShareTech. It is the world's most comprehensive and accurate drug and alcohol screen, right? Drug and alcohol screen. We screen for over 100 substances, a very unique process that requires no observed collection. You know, when I was actually part of the team that started this company, that was one of the most appealing things about this entirely new way of doing drug and alcohol screening. You know, the stigmatization of having to go into a room, right, and actually put eyes on the process to ensure somebody is not cheating is an outdated way of doing it, and it doesn't have to be done anymore. So go to betterdrugtest.com, purchase one of these tests. I guarantee you're going to be more confident in knowing that your loved one is not using X, Y, or Z drug or alcohol after you've gone through the ShareTech drug test. Next up is our friends at Easy Sheets as well. Again, whether you're a short-term rental or just a connoisseur of sheets, get that nicely pressed, crisp sheet professionally cleaned and sent right to your door. We have multiple programs. They can be sheets that just are dedicated for you, or they could be in a pool of sheets that you could be using and changing from flannel to temperature cooling to whatever it is you want. Go to easysheets.club. I think you're really going to be surprised at how much you're going to enjoy that service. Last two plugs, go to theunlicensedcounselor.com. Book some time with me. You like what you hear, want to spend a little bit more time. Actually does kind of tie into one of the points I want to talk about today is access to care. And getting in to see someone and how that can be challenging, whether that's cash-based or insurance and different things like that. And last but not least, our friends at Stitch Fix, I'm talking to you, ship me out a box one of these days, and we'll call it even for all the free publicity we've been giving you. So, okay, awesome. So good to be here. Something that's really been on my mind lately is I hear the phrase, access to care a lot when it comes to counseling, when it comes to behavioral health services, when it comes to drug and alcohol treatment. You know, we get a lot of people that we need to make it easier to get to care. There needs to be more accessibility to care. And I've gotten to the point where I've started to get frustrated with that phrase, right? And let me set the table. There has never been a time in history ever where care is more available, accessible, specific to each and every condition that you may be addressing. There is telehealth, there is virtual sessions, there is cash pay services, there are insurance-based services. The state by state and federal government provides aid and resources and social service programs. There are services that will pick you up and take you to that. And I'm not talking about Uber and Lyft. I'm talking about specific companies that are behavioral health organizations that will take you or your loved one if they're unable to get there and drive them to their appointment. I mean, accessible to care is, in my opinion, no longer a thing. Sorry. You got a smartphone. You got services that'll pick you up and take you wherever you need to be. We need to just eliminate that phrase, access to care. It just doesn't exist anymore. Care is everywhere. It takes a little bit of motivation to find it. Now, if you want to push back and say, Steve, well, you know, but care is it's expensive, or sometimes it takes a long time to get in. Okay. Now, we can have a conversation that the cost of some of this care is a little cost prohibitive or expensive for some people, or maybe they don't have the budget to add that. I'm willing to entertain that conversation of like, look, it's $150, $200, $300, $400, whatever it is, a couple hundred bucks a month to go and see a counselor on a regular basis. You know, for a lot of families, if you're going once a week or every other week and it's a $150, $200 session, you know, you're adding a car payment to your monthly budget each and every month, right? And that's significant. I understand that. But I get frustrated when I continue to hear people just saying, you know, that we need to make it easier and more accessible folks to get to these care. If we want to make it more reasonably priced in some way, shape, or form, or subsidized in some way, shape, or form, now I'm listening, right? I get it. But let's also remember that insurance can and does cover this. I think where people often run into a problem with this access to care and cost to care thing is everybody wants the best, right? I want the best surgeon. I want the best specialist. I want the best, blah, blah, blah. Look, you know, I've spoken on other podcasts. There are certainly levels of good within therapists, counselors, social workers that are going to be better than others. Like, I understand that. But when you're in a situation that warrants you needing to seek counseling service or your loved one needing to seek counseling service, it is almost always going to be better for you to just make sure that you get in to see someone and start talking and working through. You know, the level of training that individuals have to become counselors, therapists, social workers, whatever, you know, there's at least guidelines and standards that you can know that hopefully they're going to have an idea of what they're talking about and can offer some support, maybe a point in the direction of the resources. Maybe you're not in love with that person. I get it. But getting to sit down with someone and starting to have the conversation with them about exactly what's going on in your life is going to be so much better for you, whether or not that person is the best counselor, quote unquote, or not. And now, let me also say this. There's been an explosion of peer support folks as well, whether it's a recovery coach or, you know, these kind of peer mentors that are out in the world that are obviously going to be cost less than maybe your traditional counselor. And I would like to think that they're screened or have gone through some training process, which most of the time that they have. And again, if that's the starting point for you to just reach out to engage someone to start going through whatever's going on, it's still better than just sitting there stuck in those feelings, thoughts, emotions, stewing, not making any forward progress, and really, you know, not getting anywhere, and again, not getting better. So, you know, I wanted to come out and really start saying that, you know, doing something's better than doing nothing. The issue isn't access to care. It may be cost of care. And I am seeing a lot in the industry as well, too, that there's long wait times to get into folks as well, too. You know, one of the things, and I've said this on multiple podcasts, I think, too, if we could start treating counseling therapy as kind of a wellness thing so that you need it, you're using it before you need it versus crisis mode, things are going on, life blowing up, you know, crashing down on me. Now I need to reach out and hope this person's 3, 4, 5 weeks out before I can see them. If you had been engaged with that person, and again, maybe this could be on a once a month basis, right? That's cost effective. You're kind of managing whatever's going on in your life. They have an idea of your background, because the first session or two, truthfully, especially if you're going in crisis mode, are going to be history, background, almost just like a screening and questionnaire, which you will have to do before you even sit down and start digging into whatever issue or crisis is going on. So I wish, if people listen to this, you know, reach out to somebody. Go once a month right now and just use it as a tune-up. You know, I got my oil changed today on my truck, and it's like, you know what? It's preventative maintenance, right? If we start thinking of counseling like preventative maintenance, and then if things get challenging, you have someone there that's already armed with kind of who you are, what's going on, and may be able to better or shorten the duration of said crisis as well, too. So, you know, that's been coming up. You're going to see that in a lot of the behavioral health world. And again, this, my biggest frustration is it just becomes such an echo chamber in behavioral health, whether it's Twitter or Instagram or LinkedIn, and just kind of people just saying the same things over and over again, call it virtue signaling or what, but it's just the same sea of sameness. And I'm just going, let's think about things a little bit differently. Let's think about what are actually the root causes of this, right? And if it's cost to care, maybe we can address that, or maybe there's other ways that we can, you know, kind of support people. So something to think about. Now, the other side of this that I wanted to dovetail and talk about is, you know, on the treatment side of this, this is trending in the state of Arizona right now, is that there was what's looking like, and I don't think the final number is out yet, just in the state of Arizona, there has been over $1 billion, with a B, $1 billion in fraudulent billing for outpatient programs here in the state of Arizona. You know what's funny is I was talking to some folks before actually bringing this subject onto air like we're doing today. I was actually warned. This is a true story. I was actually warned to be careful about talking about this because the individuals and organizations that have set up this billion-dollar fraud, it's a criminal enterprise. So, I mean, that's how serious, significant, and I guess this has been going on in other states as well, too. But look, I'm not sharing anything that isn't all over the news and on the headlines right now that this is a billion-dollar fraud, specifically for intensive outpatient programs where they were, this certain plan was recruiting people who didn't need treatment. They were getting almost trafficked into these programs just so that they could bill for that butt being in a seat and maybe not even actually being in the seat as well, too, where they can now bill an entire rate for whatever the CPT code is for that outpatient program. And this went, to give you the scope of what we're talking about here, this was the 4 years, at least that we're aware of, I think, at this point, starting in 2019 and running through 2022. This started as kind of a $50 million fraud, $130 million fraud, $290 million fraud, and escalating to $668 million in the year 2022. That is a massive part in the state of Arizona. We call it Access, which is the state Medicaid system. This is over $1 billion. So there are some tremendously bad players out here in the industry. And I'm sure this is probably going on in other states across the country right now. And it's incredibly sad because not only is this, you know, causing a lot of people who were trafficked into this, who maybe were promised help that didn't get the help because they got linked up with over 100 organizations that have now been suspended who were participating in this specific type of fraud. But now on the good player side in the treatment center industry as well, too, the code that people were using, which was actually a valid code that was helping many people who couldn't afford care, right? Going back to my earlier point and the cost of care, they have completely eliminated and capped that code. So what was, let's call it $400 or $500 a day has now been capped at $150 a day. And the organizations that were providing, you know, state-funded treatment for this, I think we're going to unfortunately see a lot of respected people I know, organizations, treatment centers, outpatient programs that are probably going to have to make significant changes and potentially even close the doors, impacting how many people can get care and help because that was really their only way to afford care, right? So all of these bad players have now impacted not only the people that they just, you know, committed the fraud on, but now to the people who were doing all the good things within the state of Arizona. They've pulled back the reins so far that now we're going to hurt the people who are actually doing the right thing, and it's really going to close the door and actually hamper not only the cost of care and the access to care as well, too. So it's really sad and frustrating. And I think in the behavioral health world, this stuff happens all the time. So it makes me mad because the behavioral health community really is the laughingstock of medicine, right? It's we have no outcomes. There's no documented improvements. Oftentimes, you know, you can look at drug testing as a tool. People relapse and they're turning over and going through this. And people in the behavioral health world like to compare addiction to a disease. And I don't get caught up in that, but I'm like, in one, there's more stringent ways to manage and kind of see recovery on the physical medicine side of this things versus kind of this nebulous behavioral health world. And we really are the laughing stock. And then you layer in, not that there's not fraud on the actual medical side of this, but the amount of fraud that feels like it happens so regularly, so often, that is oftentimes people who were maybe in recovery, who then got into the business of behavioral health, who now are just out here ripping people off and ripping organizations off to the tune of tens and hundreds and now billions of dollars across the country. And you wonder why people are so leery to go stick their loved one in a $10, $20, $30, $40, $50,000 outpatient or treatment center type of program. I'm going, yeah, I get it. Like, it's just oftentimes run by criminals. Right? There's just no better way to say it than it's often run by criminals. And until the licensing, the organization, the rules, the people are handing out a lot of these things, get their act together, we have better audits across all of these organizations. I mean, how do you not see from $50 million in billing for this one specific code to $668 million? There's not a report that goes across somebody's desk and goes, hey, hello, something's going on here. We just, this seems out of whack. So, you know, obviously that's just in the state of Arizona, but this happens in Florida, this happens in Texas, New York. I mean, this is happening everywhere, right? And it's sad because it just tarnishes all the good players, but I get it. And I'm not sure what the answer is at the moment. You know, there's the Joint Commission, which is kind of the accrediting, you know, for a lot of these organizations nationwide. There's state government run, you know, organizations that kind of handle the licensing. I think we got to clamp down, whether it's background checks, more audits, whatever it is, this industry needs to get a better reputation. And we can't continue to allow these bad players to just ruin it for the rest of us. I mean, now we're going to go backwards in care. And they just released the 2022 opioid overdose deaths, although I like to say poisonings because I really believe it's a poisoning, not a death. And we've gone up 2%. And it's like, oh, wow, it's not 20 or 30 or 50%. So it's like, but wait a second, we were at record highs before. So yeah, I went from 109 to whatever 2% more of that is. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. So it's like, when you read that, it's like, all right, good work. And I'm like, no, this is still terrible. Like there's still 100+ thousand people that we could have prevented if we would have maybe been able to find them the right level of care in some way, shape, or form. So I don't know. This stuff has just been pissing me off a little bit. And I wanted to come out just kind of saying, you know, shame on Arizona, shame on the criminals, really. And then I feel for a lot of the providers that are out there in their community that are going to get stuck holding water for the bad acts that are out there across the state. Frustrating, super frustrating stuff. Okay, a couple other things I want to talk about. I can't take credit for this topic, but as I kind of go through social media, I like to keep an eye on, you know, kind of some of the other trending topics that are out there. And I came across this one that I thought was kind of unique. And again, not taking credit for it. I think it was actually on a TikTok, as I saw. But it was a really interesting approach where it was like this approach of kind of letting someone who's kind of trying to steamroll you or have their way or they're not meeting your expectations. And the examples that this individual is giving, it's like, you know, you're dating someone and they want to go. Let me start that over again. They want to go out and do something that you're not on board with, right? Like they want to go. Let me just share the example that I have here. Stop wasting time and energy trying to get other people to meet your expectations. And the point of what she was doing is like, let them, right? Like, let's just stop trying to control. And let's let them show who they truly are, right? And the way that she put it on TikTok that I thought was really interesting is like, you get to control what you do next then, right? So your kid wants to stay up a little bit late. Okay, fine. Let them, right? Your boyfriend, girlfriend wants to do something you don't agree with. You know, let them. Like, let's stop trying to control what we can't control from some of these other people as well. So I really thought it was just an interesting little phrase where it was like, just let them. And when I heard that, and then I started kind of trying to apply it in my own world, I was like, this is kind of cool. Like, this is kind of a cool tool. It's something I don't agree with, right? You know, but I'm not going to sit here and get all twisted up over something that, okay, you're showing me who you really are. Fine, let them, right? And I'll just kind of sit back. And some people say, well, that's, you know, too passive, or you're getting steamrolled or something like that. And I'm like, no, let me see who you really are. And then, you know what? I'll get to make my decision on how I want to do this afterwards, right? And if it comes out that this isn't a person that I want to be with, or an approach I agree with, then that's fine. But I thought it was really kind of cool. And it was almost freeing in a sense as I was sitting here kind of noodling on it as well. I was like, let them. They're doing X, Y, and Z. Just let them, right? So I don't know, just a little nugget that kind of came across my desk this week. I was like, I think I want to mention that. You can probably find it on TikTok if you search let them. I think it was TikTok or Instagram, one of those. I can't keep track of all of them, and oftentimes those things get shared back and forth. But it was a little nugget just on kind of a, I like little thoughts, right, that you can kind of implement very easily and kind of see how it works in your world, right? Like, not everything has to be some huge cognitive behavioral therapeutic approach to this. There's value in all that stuff, but it's like, I love a little ism that can kind of run through my brain when something's kind of maybe pissing me off or getting me frustrated or something. It's like, all right, let's let them. So yeah, let's just see how this thing plays out a little bit, right? So as always, when I find something, a little nugget, I like to pass that along. Okay, now back half of the show, I want to talk about a little bit of a topic. It was actually a question that came in, and I try and pick topics as always that I have some interest in as well too. And this is one that I've been struggling with myself as well too. And the question was, how do I forgive someone, right? How do I forgive someone? And, you know, this one has been, it's been on my mind quite a bit. I've got some stuff that I've got to kind of work through on my own here. And I had some family business stuff that was really challenging, right? And I wouldn't say that, you know, we're past that. I've got my ex-wife and some of her behavior that I don't agree with as we were leading up to divorce, and then also, you know, kind of past the divorce as well too, because I'm just like, all right, I don't like how you're engaging with the new boyfriend and kind of the involvement of my daughter. And, you know, I find myself having a lot of these resentments and kind of just anger that I'm still kind of working through on a lot of these things. But, you know, I don't think I have all the answers on forgiveness. And if you Google forgiveness, you're going to see a million different ways that you can kind of go through a step-by-step approach on how to kind of forgive someone. But the one thing that kind of came to my mind, and I watched actually, believe it or not, some church videos on this as well too, and I'm not going to get all biblical on you today, but there was one key nugget that I took out of this that I thought was really helpful, that I was like, okay, I can actually take this and apply this in my own world and at least let me start thinking about forgiveness in a new way, right? And the first thing that this, not the first thing, but one of the things that I really took away from this was, forgiveness is granted before it's felt. And I was like, okay, I just had to sit with that for a little while, right? Where it's like, okay, I'm pissed, I'm mad, but I'm walking around like with all this stuff. Like, I don't think family business stress or ex-wife, like, I don't think they're sitting around walking around with this, carrying around this whole day long. So I'm like, but I feel like I've been stuck in it, right? You know, feel like I've been stuck, or it's just, I don't know if stuck or it's just been weighing on me. And it's like, okay, you can look at the forgiveness from a biblical perspective, you can just look at it from a person to person's perspective, whatever it is. I thought the advice that forgiveness is granted before it's felt was something worthy of really chewing on, because I got there and I'm just going, it should be on them, right? They should be forgiving me. They were in the wrong. They were, right? And I'm just going, meanwhile, I'm sitting here stuck with those feelings. And the other thing that it was talking about is forgiveness isn't actually a feeling either. And it's, again, all these little thoughts that were kind of running through my head as I was thinking about how we could potentially, you know, use this and talk about it into the podcast. And I'm just going, forgiveness is granted before it felt. what does that really mean? It means that I have to be the bigger person, right? It means that I don't necessarily have to like this person or continue to have a relationship with that person, per se. I mean, it would be nice if you could, right? But to be able to grant them forgiveness and not expect anything kind of in return back out of that. Because as I've put more thought into this, you know, this is, I need to start healing from this. I can't control what they're feeling, what they're thinking, where they're going with this. And, you know, being totally honest here, I haven't taken the steps to actually do this yet. Like, this was me kind of, I would think on Sunday, and we record this every Thursday. So this is me been stewing on this for about 4 or 5 days as I'm sitting here going, okay, I got two people probably in my life that I've got to grant forgiveness to. And this isn't me being holier than thou or anything like that. This is me needing to find a way to kind of get past where I've been feelings of the anger and the resentment and just that stuff that keeps coming up. And there'll be even times where it's like, okay, I think I'm past this. I'm moving on. I'm doing things. And then when you're sitting alone or driving in a car and it's like, whoosh, something comes rushing back to your song or something, a building, something just triggers you. And it's like, holy cow, yeah, I'm not past this. Like, I really need to address this in order to kind of free myself going forward. So, you know, first off, I have to kind of acknowledge this, right? That, wow, I had to kind of come to the understanding that I think that this is what I need to be doing. And truthfully, I hadn't been thinking about forgiveness. And what I listened to did come from a church service. I didn't go to church. It was actually a YouTube video, but I thought it was really well said. And it sparked me thinking. I was like, well, crap, maybe that's what I've been missing this entire time, right? Is that I need to start thinking about forgiving that person, even though I feel like I've been wronged and wrong rightfully, you know, but I'm going to acknowledge that and I'm going to understand that. Now, I think I'm about ready. And I think that's kind of next on the list is I think I'm ready to kind of get to that point to do that. You know, I'll be on the microphone next week, so you can hold me accountable, Robin, and ask me if I actually did anything, and I'll shoot you straight. I won't lie to you. But, you know, now that I've kind of accepted it, I feel like I'm ready. I've taken a little bit of time with this. You know, I think I'm ready to finally do it, and I want to go and I'm going to work on the actual words, and maybe I'll report back next week what I actually say when it kind of comes time to this. But I think the mentality that I'm going to kind of go for is I want to be able to let this go, right? I really want to be able to let this go. And what I keep thinking about is that I don't want to be granting them forgiveness and expecting something back, right? And I'm afraid, not afraid, but I feel like if I'm being honest in the heart of hearts, that a lot of us would probably be like, okay, I forgive you. And then I expect them to say, you're forgiven, or I forgive you, or it's okay, or like in a hug and a, you know, like, I need to make sure that before I get into this, like, I am wiping the expectation side of what this could look like go. And I need to make sure that I'm doing this because I feel like it's the right thing to do and I'm not expecting something back. And I feel like in the past that I probably would have done something like this in order to get something back, or maybe even re-spark something, or, you know what I mean? Like, do it with an intention behind it. And that's just, you know, as I'm really trying to be, again, more intentional with everything in my life, it's like, okay, let's make sure that we're doing this for the right reasons. You've thought this through. And now we can kind of proceed, right? So I don't have the exact words that I'm going to use at this moment, but I do know that I don't want to carry this forgiveness or this anger and resentment and sadness, right, for the rest of my life. So I've become aware. I think this is the right thing that I need to be doing. I'll work on the words. I've reduced or eliminated any expectations from this. Now, hopefully we can proceed and kind of start to move on. I don't think it's going to be instantaneous, right? I don't think it's going to be instantaneous, But I have at least started the process of kind of putting that to bed and then kind of opening up myself and kind of freeing myself that I have done what I felt was the appropriate thing to do. It honestly, this has been a mind bender for me over the last week. And it sounds stupid or weird that, you know, I haven't thought of me being the one to do forgiveness. I honestly think I've been in both situations been like, okay, I'll just sit back here and wait for my forgiveness to come when they see the light or when they realize how wrong that they've been or they've done that, you know, and I'm just going, wow, okay, I think I've got this entirely backwards. And it's just got me thinking about this topic. And honestly, I almost put a pin in this forgiveness topic and thought we could do a whole show on it. But I'm going to dig a little bit deeper and maybe we'll circle back and touch on this. And I can just share from personal experience exactly how it's going. Or maybe, hey, I said this and I should have maybe said this or done it that way, right? You know, I'm happy to kind of pass that along. But it's just a topic that's really, really been weighing on me. And again, I think I've been going at it the wrong way. I think I was waiting for someone, and maybe that's the little internal pity party. It's like, okay, I was wronged. I'll just wait here and they can come to me. And I'm going, wait a second, who's suffering in this, right? Who's suffering in all this? And the answer is me, right? By holding that in and not thinking and just waiting and waiting and waiting. So I don't know, really an interesting kind of deep week of kind of thinking, and I thought it would be an interesting topic to share to everybody. So, you know, we covered a little bit of ground today. We talked about the problem with care, cost of care, access to care. We talked about this let them approach. I think it's interesting. Google it. Do a quick, you know, like I said, I think it's Instagram or TikTok. Find it. I think it's a really interesting concept. Just it's a little nugget that you can put into play right away, and just let them. Send me a message, DM, whatever it is, that if you think it's worthwhile, if you found any value out of it. And then this forgiveness topic. If you're sitting there listening to it, I'm sure we could all probably forgive somebody. And it may release stuff that you don't even know that you're kind of holding on to. So just chew on it for a little bit, right? Just chew on it. I'm going to report back, and I'll continue to be transparent and open with exactly how my stuff goes. I think it's a great way for us to kind of heal collectively. But I'll be certainly the first to tell you, you know, how it kind of goes as I share my experience and journey on the forgiveness side of things as well, too. So hope you found a lot of what we talked about interesting today. As always, covered a little bit of ground. So grateful for everybody who's out there. Again, if you get a minute, please like, subscribe, share, follow, tell a friend. You know, it costs you nothing. It takes a second to do, and it really helps, you know, fledgling businesses like ourselves kind of build up a following as well. My name is Steve Moak. I am the Unlicensed Counselor. Until next time, thank you very much.